Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. And if you've missed any of my shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. I've interviewed a little bit of everyone throughout the year that I've had this show going, from producers, directors, writers, screenwriters, that is. You name it, I've interviewed on here. And if you'd like to be on my show, you want to contact me through my email, which is ravenprods, ravenprods, @yahoo.com. And I will look at your stuff and see if I can bring you on the show. Well, today I'm interviewing a lady who has a lot of experience in all aspects of the industry. She's an actress, she's a producer, she's a casting director, and a lot more. She's done a lot of projects both in Hollywood and in South Florida. And her latest project is a film called Infidel, and hopefully she'll be joining us on the line shortly. Her name is Rose Warner, and a lot of you in the industry have heard of her. Hopefully she'll be coming on board here in a second. But she's done a lot of different things through the years. I've had a chance to work with her a little bit. We did a commercial together, and she's done projects, like I said, in Hollywood, some big projects like The Lion of Judah, which is religious animated film, and you know, it's more of a mainstream production, which got distribution in the major theaters. And she's also done local productions like The Ultimate Sacrifice, which had Dan Aykroyd involved with it, and I believe he did the narration in that film. I'm not positive. I am hoping to bring the director of that film on as well. But I do have Rose on the line. Let me just check in here. Okay, Rose, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hello? Hi, great. Great. You know, I'm going to start with Infidel, your latest project. Tell us a little bit about the plot for those who are unfamiliar with it.
The plot is very eclectic. It's taking basically a couple of old stories and bringing it to modern-day times. And it's, you know, it's basically about, you know, people being challenged about their belief system, not necessarily religious, but just their, you know, their morals, their values, what they really truly believe in and how they would stand for those type of things. You know, if they would coward out or if they would stand up to what they believe in.
Okay. And how did you get involved in the project?
George Montero is the one who wrote and created it, and he approached me on it, asked me if I would help him cast it. And I agreed to because I think he's an amazing writer. He's an up and coming director, and so that's basically how I got into it.
Okay, and it's shot right here in South Florida. Tell us a little bit about your locations.
We were very fortunate. A church in Pasadena. I think I'm here in California, so a church in Plantation. They offered for us to use it, and we kind of, ironically, we said to them, you understand we're going to destroy your church. We're going to turn it upside down. We're going to throw the chairs around. And they were like, okay. Because they, you know, we allowed the pastor of the church to read the plot and read the whole story, and he was like, oh, this is great. You know, this is really, really great. And so they donated the church, and the whole congregation and the people who attend that specific church were very supportive.
Wow. That's great. Now, is it all shot in the church?
Yes, everything shot inside the church.
That's always helpful when you have one location.
Yes, yeah, it was really ideal. You know, it did kind of disrupt their normal schedules, but again, they were very accommodating.
And how did you get your cast for this?
You know, I just reached out in a couple of avenues. One was through Facebook, and then two, through Key Light Alliance, and then just out to a couple of a couple of agents.
Okay, great. So, did you have a casting?
Yes,
I did.
Or was
it direct book? Okay. Okay, and well, what do you think was the most challenging part of this film?
You know, we basically had no budget, and a lot of our talent were already booked on other things. So, trying to coordinate the scheduling was probably the only difficult thing. Other than that, everything was pretty much very seamless. Everyone, was very cooperative. The cast, the crew, really, you know, went out of their way to make this happen.
Mm-hmm. And you have a premiere coming up We don't want to quite call it a premiere.
Yeah, only because we're doing the film festivals. Yeah, because we're doing the film festivals, and if you call it a premiere, then we're ousted. But
right.
So we're classifying it as a screening. But yes, we do.
Yeah, is that just for cast and crew?
Oh no, it's open to the public.
Okay, so tell us the details on that so people can find out more about it.
Well, it's going to be done at the Crest Theater, and my co-host for this event is Frank McKinney from Del Rey. And Frank McKinney was the one who actually got the Crest Theater for us through his not-for-profit, which is Caring House. And he's actually one of the leads in the cast, which is a story in itself, quite frankly. But he, you know, we're having it at the Crest Theater in Del Rey. It is going to be, quote, a Hollywood premiere, but a screening. We're doing the red carpet. We're having the lights, the limos, the gowns. You know, we're going all out on this. It's going to be just like a Hollywood premiere.
Mm-hmm. That should be fun. Hopefully,
yeah,
I will
exactly
be there as well. And now you said you're going to do the film circuit after this, the film festival circuit. Do you already have plans? Have you already sent it out to places? Do you know anything yet?
Well, we haven't sent it out yet because what we're going to be showing at the screening is the director's cut, and then from that we're going to go ahead and finalize it. But we do have plans to send it to Cannes. Yeah, I have. You're from LA, so you know, there's people out here who can evaluate and decide what film festivals are beneficial. We are shooting for the film festivals that are Oscar aligned. We do believe this film is definitely Oscar quality. It's going to bring a lot of attention. It's going to be somewhat controversial too. Some people are going to be upset, but that's okay. You know, anything is. Anything that's said is good. You know, so we're definitely going to Cannes. We're looking at Toronto. We're looking at Sundance. Those are ones that our consultant, you know, our film festival consultant has advised us to do, and they really feel that our film is very strong for these type of festivals.
Great. Now, how do people find out more about it? You have a website you want to give?
Yes. We have a website right now. It's www.infidelthemovie.net. There's some photos on there, or the teaser. We haven't compiled the trailer yet, the actual trailer, because we're still getting some things aligned on that. And then if you go to the event page, it does talk about the screening that's going to happen on December 29th. But it's got a lot of information on there about it. We're going to, you know, actually up the website after we get done with the screening. We're running as fast as we can to get this done because it's being scored out of LA by a composer out of LA. We're aligning with him right now, trying to get that done.
Great. Why don't you spell that website so that we have the right spelling too?
www.infidelthemovie.net.
Okay, great. And you're listed as the casting director, or are you also producing that?
I'm the producer, but I'm also the casting director.
Okay. And you've done a lot of production.
Yes.
That's kind of what you've been focused on lately. And you've done some of these more independent films, and you've done bigger projects that have gone to theatrical screenings, like Lion of Judah, which had a screening. Tell me about the difference for those that really don't understand the LA mentality and what needs to happen to make a theatrical screening, to make a bigger budget picture.
Well, the difference is, now independents can go to the theater, but they have to understand there's, you know, most of the theaters are basically rented. They have long-term leases with the theater owners, you know, like, for instance, Cinemark. You know, let's say Sony may lease out of Cinemark to theaters. So their films are automatically going to go in there. So what happens a lot of times with films you see, if you look at the credits, it's going to state produced by, and it may say some independent production house, but they had to go to Sony in order to get it distributed. So, and in order to get it distributed, you have to get it picked up, which is kind of a catch-22 because they want you to have a marketable talent or A-list, B-list type talent that they can actually, you know, market. Because, if you know, in very few cases you can market a film without someone knowing who it is. If it's you know, Jane Doe, people are like, but, you know, then again, if you put in, hypothetically, Rachel McAdams, it's like, whoa, I know who she is. She's great. And it draws people more so than Jane Doe. Not that Rachel McAdams is a better actress, but it's a marketing. So you have to consider both. Mm-hmm. When I've done other features, I had to put names in that would draw specific niche markets or markets in general. You know, you can't think people are going to understand that this particular film is for ages 17 to 24 or whatever. You know, Infidel for us is really for everyone, but we're really kind of targeting more the you know, older age. You know, we do have a young girl who is in our film. She's 15 years old. Her name is Blacey. I never can say her last name, and I feel terrible because they're just such an amazing family. I know I'm going to botch the name, and I apologize. Her name is Blacey Shavivan. I can't say it. I'm sorry. But she is actually Billy Graham's great-granddaughter.
Oh, wow.
That's
great.
She's just an amazing, an amazing talent, up-and-coming talent that I just was so honored to work with, and just meeting her family and her father actually is one of the pastors at Calvary in Fort Lauderdale, and her uncle is a pastor at, I think it's it used to be Dr. Kennedy's church. So she's, you know, they are just a very humble, amazing family.
I bet. You've done, okay, you know, like The Lion of Judah is also a religious-based film. And do you want to tell us anything about that?
Yeah, the thing when we created The Lion of Judah, it wasn't to make it so much religious. It was kind of taking, you know, the Easter story, per se, and just kind of toning it down and just having the basics in there. And it was focused more on the barn animals. And to me, I grew up kind of in a bastardized type religion where it was kind of Catholic Jewish. I grew up in Texas. And so I always saw this guy kind of hanging on a cross, bleeding, it kind of freaked me out. It was like, you know what, this is not what I would think kids should see. So when we created it, we really wanted to be for kids and adults, kind of how a lot of animations are done today. If you look at Shrek, yeah, the kids see the surface, but the underlying things, the adults get it. And that's kind of what we did with The Lion of Judah, is I wanted the kids to really just see the Easter story in a very simplex situation where it wasn't so threatening and overwhelming and depressing like a lot of times it is. I mean, not that what happened was a good thing, but it should also show that a lot of, you know, sincerity and a lot of love, you know. So that's why we did it. We did it very lightly. I mean, you know, in our Easter story, Jesus doesn't come in until the end. He's only there in a short time, but you get the gist of it. The whole premise of it's there. It's not shoved down your face. It's not a Bible being thrown in your face. And I have my own, you know, belief system, but I don't try to throw it in other people's faces. I think, you know, let people see what they see, and they're going to get what they're supposed to get out of it.
Right. And now, where is that now? I know it had theatrical release. Is there a way for people to see it? Is it on DVD or where is that?
It is on DVD, and there is a website in order for you to buy it. It did get distributed through Warner Brothers. And it's, I think if you go to, let me look, I'm on my computer. I think it's www.thelionofjudahthemovie.net or something like that. Hold on a second, I can tell you. But it's, but it is distributed on DVD already.
Okay, great. And now you used to work reading scripts. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I've done a lot of script analysis, and basically to, you know, take a script and let people know, like, you know, it's I did was I worked in acquisitions and marketing, and in acquisitions it was to basically see the value of a script, you know, if it was theatrical only DVD, if it didn't have a chance at all, and because a lot of people have a great story but they don't realize people don't want boring, they don't want just the average Joe story, they want something. Unfortunately, people want conflict. They want to see something. They want to see a hero. They want to see something that people struggle. And so you have to have those different arcs. If people don't know what arcs are, they're basically arc conflicts. And you can't just have one. You got to have several, and you got to have a major one. And a lot of people don't learn really how to write scripts. And ironically, some people you know, they teach script writing classes, and they really don't understand the whole marketing or the whole distribution of it. I do, and so when I look at the script, I can say, well, you know what, your distribution is only going to be this market in these countries or these particular markets, and so your possibility of being picked up will only be for DVD, and it's going to be, you know, a DVD house. It's not going to be one of the big studios.
Mm-hmm. And
so basically just analyze. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, it's just basically analyzing them and letting them realize, you know, what value they do have. And so, you know, and I tell you, take it back and rewrite it and put these type of things. And I've made suggestions to them as well. Like, you know, I would add this type of thing to give it that different depth or that different tonality.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize the paperwork that's involved with getting distribution, which is a lot.
Yeah, it is.
Clue us in on that, because people are absolutely clueless.
Well, yeah, distribution is pretty much a monster in itself. There's a lot of paperwork. I would say to get a script or get something in distribution, you got to get it qualified with SAG most of the time. Sometimes you can get away with it and not, but you normally do. And you just have to make sure that a lot of your paperwork, I mean, from the time you initially write your script until the time you bring it to them, they're goes from, you know, how you did your casting and if you had everyone in, and then if you did all the contracts and if the contracts include any residual income or any buyouts, or and then it goes to also your crews and your producers, you know, all those contracts. So that has to be included in distribution. Every person that was involved, you have to have releases. You have to have a release whoever wrote the script. You know, you have to have a release for the music. And usually the music is twofold. It's not just who composed it. It's who owns it. And if it was if the music, let's say hypothetically, was composed and published, that means recorded by the same person. Then you only need one release. But if it was recorded in session with the studio, then you have to get them to release as well. If you use anything in your film that has a trademark or that's distinguishable, you have to get releases. Hypothetical, if you use a Jeep, I've had this situation where I used a car, it was a Jeep. I actually had to get Jeep to sign a release. if you use a recognizable building, like a bank, you have to get their releases. It's a lot of paperwork. And people just think, unfortunately, that they can shoot a film and say, hey, Warner Brothers, here's this great film, I want you to distribute it. It's not that simple. And distribution can take 6 months to a year. Usually I recommend people to get their script in order and then try to partner or sell their script to the studios before they ever start day one of shooting and get distribution set up then.
So basically do everything for distribution before you even start.
Absolutely, because that way the studio is going to be in hand. They're going to help you with the paperwork because they are going to protect themselves. And that way you're not in arrears on paperwork. And, you know, if you become in arrears, sometimes it's so difficult to get it. There's a lot of things shot that never get into distribution because there's pieces of paperwork that they can never get because they didn't get it in the process and they didn't know they had to get it. And, you know, and then some people said, oh, I didn't want, no, I need to sign this or give you this. No, I'm not going to.
But for them to go to a big studio, they need to have a track record already. Also.
Usually they want someone who is not fresh out of film school. They usually want someone who's worked on some independents, has actually worked as a AD or DP, which is director of photography. They want things under their belt, at least a couple of things, and they want to see a reel too. They don't necessarily want you just to say, here, this is what I've done. They want to see a reel of your work. And it's no different for a producer or a director as it is for an actor. They want to see, you know, again, proof.
Right. And there's a lot of studios out there. How do you figure out which one is right for your film? Do you just shop them around, or what would be the best approach?
You shop. And the thing about the studios, they change, you know, the people who do acquisitions changes hands so often. So you may, what I always encourage people is always check back, because you may one day, not be able to, they won't work with you, and the next day someone else is new there. And it may be to the times. I mean, let's say 1 year they're all looking at war movies, and then the next year they may be looking at down-home movies. I mean, especially right now, the tonality is changing and what they're looking at. You just, and I recommend people to go on to like Box Office Mojo and see what the studios are doing currently. With, where are they sending out right now? You can kind of see, but the whole thing is, I understand they're 18 months ahead. There are, those were done 18 months ago. So you
right.
kind of have to play a gamble in saying, okay, that this is what they've done, and is there an, is there just been an, a saturation of this type of film? You know, what's coming up in the next year? And you have to look at also the economy, the, you know, the political streams of wherever, where our focus is, you know, in our, you know, in our outlook right now, to kind of get that. And you almost have to project 18 months out.
Mm-hmm. Is it cyclical also?
I think everything is cyclical. And I think if you look, I think everything goes on like a 7-year span, 7 to 8-year span. So you can, if you're smart and you can do the math and go back and see what happened basically 6.5 years ago, you probably can be pretty on target. But then again, this past, you know, I would say the past 5 years, you know, for everyone has been a little different than if you look back 10 years ago and 12 years ago. So, but
in
I think
way?
People can kind of, if people go back to, like, the 1980s and then and project back, in my opinion, 5 years or 6 years from that, I think they would get a pretty good idea what they can put out there.
That's interesting. That's the 80s. There are some 80s remakes coming out right now, that's for sure.
Exactly. And I think that people are looking at a lot of the that type of mindset. You know, so that's where – and I think that, like, this film that we are particularly doing – kind of hits home with a lot of that.
Okay. And you've done other independent films locally. Are there other projects that you want to kind of talk about that you've done recently?
I worked on a great project last year with Veronica Simpson. It was called The Ultimate
mm-hmm.
Sacrifice. Her storyline was really great. It's a true story. I think it was something that really needed to be brought, and ironically, I get sent to me daily, if not every other day, people sending me scripts or wanting me to help them, and I decline most of them. But this particular one, it was very touching, and it was very real, and I actually helped cast. I actually went to L.A. and found the lead actor because we wanted a specific person to play that part, and we just couldn't find that person here in South Florida. And
mm-hmm.
But that, I really think that's the story. One thing that happened with The Ultimate Sacrifice, which was great, was Veronica ran into Dan Aykroyd, and he came on board on this project.
Yeah,
and
he narrated, right?
I'm sorry?
Isn't he the narrator?
Yes, he is. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, he is.
Did you get to meet him?
I didn't personally get to meet him, but Veronica did, and he was just very for this project, very supportive of the troops and the ones that come home with, you know, PTSD. And, I mean, he's still on board. He's just, again, just very supportive, very phenomenal. And I really have great hopes for this film. She did have a premiere for it, and it's going out now. There were a few little technical problems at the premiere, but those have been resolved since then.
Okay. So do you want to give a website for that film, too?
I think that's, there's a website, www.theultimatesacrifice.com.
Okay. And any other projects? You've done a lot. You're always busy.
Yeah. Well, George and I were looking to work on another feature starting after the first of the year. We're trying to get, of course, funding in place because this will be fully funded. It's going to be called Johanna and the Well. And it's
That looks beautiful. Some of the footage that you've done for that looks absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, we actually shot it off in the Bahamas out here in the Gulf Stream. Those blue wells actually do migrate through the Gulf Stream here.
Mm-hmm.
And George has done... He has done a lot of underwater photography. He's a pretty well-known underwater photographer, in addition to being a director. But we're hoping to start that after the first of the year, probably, you know, February or March. We're looking to cast, you know, not only local talent, we're looking to cast a couple of A-listers on that because of the level of film this is. I mean, it's just a great, great film.
Now,
a great project.
All live undersea footage, or is there going to be some, special effects or anything like that with the whale?
There is going to be some special effects, and the special effects actually are going to be done by Dean Lyons. He was special effects for the
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
Yep, yeah,
exactly.
And I actually interviewed him on this show, so anyone can go back and listen to that interview too.
Yeah, he's going to be our special effects, but we are going to do some special effects because I don't think we can train a wild blue whale to swallow up a girl and spit her back out.
Right.
So, but no, he's actually going to be doing that for us.
So what's your take on that story? It's a little different than the classic story.
Well, people like going back with history, and people say, "Oh, well, you do mostly religious films." Well, if people look back to a lot of historical films, they are religious films. I mean, if you look back at Spartacus, it was a religious film. If you look back at, so the take on this one I like because it really we kind of make it a Florida story, but it's just it's kind of the. The way George has written it, it's kind of running away from your faith, which a lot of us do. And it's kind of telling you, we're all destined to do something. And sometimes we don't let destiny take its course. We fight it. And that's what this girl does in this. And in the classic story, the guy does too. He fights his destiny. And when he finally just lets go and lets his destiny happen, then good things start happening for him. And the same thing for this girl as well. But, she has her struggles and conflicts and, and it's just a great story, and I think it's a great story for, we're looking in this. I mean, we're looking to target two markets in this one, which is the 17 to 24, and then especially with the college kids today, feeling that there's no hope, or why are they going to college, or that whole age group. We want them to know, just look at your destiny and keep going forward. And then we're also wanting to look at the older group as well, the 45 and up. Group is, let them know that, you still have a purpose here. You still can contribute to here. Just because you're at a certain age doesn't mean you should be giving up or you should stop. I'm going to be 50 on at the end of this month, and it's like, I still have at least 20 years to go. So and that's what we need to let people know. Don't give up. Don't stop. Say, well, I'm this age. I can't do anything else. I'm a lost cause. No one's a lost cause.
Right. So that's good. It's inspirational.
Yes.
And
yeah,
the good thing about it being like a historical story is that people know what the story is. And I think people want to see things they know. If they don't know, well, what is this about? But this, they know what it's about, and then they may want to check it out. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Well, in two people like seeing it in a different light. Like, well, I saw it back then, but it just, show me in a different light, too. Plus, I think some people haven't seen that story, and I think them seeing it for the first time gives them the message that they didn't get with the original historic. Or sometimes some of the old stuff, it doesn't talk to today's people or today's crowds because we're so technologically inclined. To just hear a simple historic story just kind of is boring. But taking it into a different light and to a different environment. And, that then people are like, oh, I see, I got it, I understand this.
Right. And besides all the films that you're doing, you also are trying to bring the community together, and you have a group called The Table. Tell us a little bit about that.
The Table's amazing. The Table started in L.A. 19 years ago, maybe 20 years ago now, by Mark Zykrey and his wife, Elaine. And they've had, just numerous people involved in it, from Steven Spielberg to Quentin Tarantino. I mean, most of these people out in L.A., and I've attended The Table there numerous times, is the they're Oscar winners, Emmy winners. The Table is exactly that. It's almost like Arthur and the Round Table. No one's really the head, and we're all we're supposed to be there as a team and work together, and it's, you're supposed to pay it forward and pay it back. So there, if you can offer up some type of service to help someone in the community, the acting or industry community, and then when you're working on a project, then other people should step up and help you. And Infidel was done on that premises, is that we brought together some amazing people on this project. And I mean, we have camera people who worked on Burn Notice in the Glades. I mean, so these people came forward because eventually they want to do their own projects and they want us to help them support their projects. And that's what it is. You know, there's not a membership for the table. It's basically giving of yourself. You're not supposed to be a taker coming there saying, I need this, 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 and this. It's not there to promote you per se. It's to promote the community. But you can go there and say, you know, I'm an actress. I want to develop my reel. I would like to work on projects and get footage, you know, to do that. And that's okay. You know, or can someone tell me what agents? It's basically because there's no gain in it for any of us other than to help the community.
And where is the table? Is it at different locations or is it always at the same place?
Right now we're doing it in Davie at the I'm trying to think of the places right
Flashback
now.
Flashback Diner?
Yeah, at the Flashback
right?
Diner.
Yeah.
We're doing it there. They have been very supportive. They give us we're doing it the third Sunday of every month from 2 to 5. They give us the patio during that time. You know, we're hoping to eventually – we've actually been phenomenally doing well compared to the other tables. Mark Zykri opened up a couple of years ago allowing specific markets to have a table outside of L.A., which is like New York, Chicago. He's allowed us now to have one. And he's surprised that we've had, I mean, we've had up to 25 people already, and we've had other people interested. It's just been timing. We're hoping to grow ours where we have a large community. You know, I would like to see by next year 100 people coming to this and just really working together. And again, you know, if people in South Florida can understand, you know, it's not all about you because, you know, sometimes if you're not there for other people, they're not going to be there for you. In L.A.,
right.
Some of these people, again, they are Oscar and Emmy-winning, award-winning, you know, I mean, from camera people to casting, and they come to the table. And, I mean, I was sitting next to John Hurt, you know, and he was just very humble, you know. I've sat next to Fern Champion. She's a well-known casting director. And, I mean, they don't sit there and say, I'm, you know, it's not like a lot of the egos here, or a lot of egos in South Florida. They're, you're all equal at the table, and that's how it, you know, it should be in South Florida. And like I said, there's been a lot of support. Some of the agents are wanting to get involved. A couple of the casting directors down in Florida want to get involved as well, which is perfect, and they should, because, you know, we have to work together. And I think that a lot of the casting directors could know a lot more of the talent and see their disposition if they met them outside of the casting office.
Right, and vice versa.
Yeah, exactly. They can understand the casting directors, too, that they're just doing their job. And, you know, you have to understand they have to make a decision. And I know I've done casting. And, I mean, I've had a couple of people that were upset with me that I didn't cast them for certain things. But it's like it's about the project. It's not about my ego. It's not about us being friends. It's about the project. Mm-hmm. And I have to cast to the best of my ability instead of these casting directors. They have to make that decision. And it's tough. I mean, I hate going to someone and saying, you know, I'm sorry. I couldn't cast you for this because you weren't – you know, you weren't mean enough.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Calling
but,
out whatever it is.
Yeah, you know, whatever I needed for that particular character. I mean, for Infidel, there was a guy I really wanted to cast for Pedro, which is the Cuban guy. And another guy came in and he nailed it. I mean, he was that character. He totally embodied it. And I felt bad having to tell this guy that I went with someone else. You know,
yeah.
I felt terrible. But the whole thing is, and ironically, the guy who plays Pedro, he is that character, the character who did, the character Pedro in our Infidel story, the terrorist or the infidel is making fun of him that he, you know, came from Cuba by boat. And our actor, Lennon, actually came from Cuba after 13 attempts.
Wow.
You know, and finally made it here. I mean, his story is just, I mean, it just makes you cry. And you don't realize how blessed you are that this guy tried 13 times, went to jail and was beaten and everything, and did finally make it the 13th time here to the U.S. So this,
wow.
So this role for him has so much value. When he played it, every time he did that role, it would bring tears to my eyes because I knew that he was so sincere. So the other guy, again, I couldn't cast this other guy because this guy, he embodied it.
Right. Well, we are almost running out of time. Is there anything, any other websites for yourself that you want to give out or anything else that you want to mention real quick?
Actually, I just want everyone to, if you have the opportunity to come the 29th, which is going to be next Saturday, at the Crest Theater in Delray, Florida. We have two showings. We have a 6 and 8 o'clock. Afterwards, I think one of the restaurants is going to host a after party. I think it's the Buddha right by the railroad tracks on Atlantic Avenue. I'm not sure our publicist, which is Gladys Colon, is handling that. But anyway, if you have opportunity to come, it's a great film. It's going to definitely touch you in some way. Either it's going to make you think or it's going to touch your heart, or it's just an amazing film because in everyone who was a part of it, is amazing, just amazing people, you know, from the lead, well, they're all leads in my opinion, but even the congregation who was involved, we actually had the congregation be extras, and they were amazing, you know, because they were running around sabotaging their own church, I mean, you know, like throwing chairs, and it was just, I mean, and it's funny, because the guy who we actually cast as a pastor is the pastor of that church, and he looked afterwards and was like, he says, wow, look at my church. I mean, it looked like a tornado had hit it, you know. But then we set it back up again and did it all over again, you know, several times. So,
yeah.
But just, again, I would just love everyone to come out. You know, definitely come and introduce yourself to me. If you, you know, I don't really want to discuss projects that night, but you can kind of see what we did. And it took a lot of people to put this together. I would say at least 50 people to make this happen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, and do you have a website for yourself that you want to give out, or are you on Facebook? Like, what do you want to? How do you want people to contact you?
I have my own website. It's www.rosewarner.com. I can be contacted on there, or I do have a Facebook as well. It's basically Facebook Rose Warner One.
Okay.
But yeah, they can contact me on there, or they can contact me through my website. That's one of the easiest two ways.
Okay, great. Well, thanks a lot, Rose, for being on the show today, and I will probably see you soon.
Okay, and you have a nice holiday.
All right, you too.
Okay,
bye-bye. Bye. Okay, well, that was our chat with Rose Warner. As you can see, she has an extensive experience in a lot of areas, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. I've been to little seminars that she's had where she's gone for hours talking about the paperwork involved, and she knows a lot, has a lot of connections with the independent and the mainstream films, like I said. So she is definitely someone to get to know, but we're done for today, obviously, and I will be back next week with someone new. I never like to announce who it is. I like it to be a surprise, but I will have somebody completely different next week. So tune in, same time, 1 p.m., here on Blog Talk Radio. And please, as always, go to my Facebook, which is Indie Streak, just like the show, and please like the page, because I do have castings and events and different things up there that you can't find anywhere else. I don't post them anywhere else. Okay, so check that out, and I will be back next week, guys. Thanks again for tuning in. Bye-bye.